The Eixample Walk. Barcelona's ritziest and glitziest neighborhood is a refreshing break from the crowded lanes of the old town. A walk through the Eixample lets you feel the bracing spirit of newness and modernity, what the Barcelonans call modernisme. Hi, I'm Rick Steves. On this walk through the Eixample, we'll plug into the energy of today's Barcelona. We'll explore this neighborhood of upscale apartments, fashionable shops, trendy restaurants, and well-dressed locals living a hip urban lifestyle. Along the way, we'll also see pockets of workaday Barcelona, a venerable deli, a flower shop open 24/7, and a colorful old market hall with tons of local charm and hardly a tourist in sight. To be fair, the Eixample is also a place of noisy traffic on wide boulevards, but we'll do our best to keep to the tree-shaded side streets. A highlight of this walk is the Eixample's star attraction, several eye-catching buildings in the Modernista style. We'll see two Modernista musts, the mansion called La Pedrera, also called Casa Milà, and the row of homes lining the street known as the Block of Discord. To do this walk, allow about an hour and a half, plus more if you go inside any of the Modernist sites, which we will not do on this walk, by the way. If you do go in, advance tickets are essential, so check a guidebook for details. Now, let's get started as we walk through this neighborhood of elegant mansions, stylish boutiques, and dazzling buildings by unconventional architects with nearly unpronounceable names. To help us along the way, I've invited a good friend and virtual travel buddy. Welcome, Lisa.
Bon dia, Ricardo.
Lisa will give us helpful directions and sightseeing tips throughout the tour.
And my first tip is to be sure you get our tour updates. Just press the icon at the lower right of your device. You'll find any updates and helpful instructions unique to this tour.
Things like closures, opening hours, and reservation requirements.
There's also tips on how to use this audio tour and even the full printed script.
Yes, so pause for just a moment right now to review our updates and special tips.
It's okay, we'll wait.
And then,
let the tour begin.
The tour begins, Passeig de Gràcia.
Begin at the metro stop called Diagonal. From inside the Diagonal station, take the Passeig de Gràcia exit. You'll surface at the head of the broad boulevard called Passeig de Gràcia. Rick?
Thanks, Lisa. Stand at the head of the street and gaze downhill. Passeig de Gràcia is the Eixample's main street. It's a grand, 50-yard-wide, tree-lined boulevard that runs right through the middle of the district. At the far end, 7 blocks down, is Barcelona's main square, Plaça de Catalunya. On our walk, we'll go gently downhill along this main drag, ending at Plaça de Catalunya. Along the way, we'll zigzag left and right through some pleasant side streets.
Sounds great. So let's start walking down Passeig de Gràcia along the right side of the street.
As you walk, you immediately get the gist of the Eixample. It's a big checkerboard grid of streets with big wide boulevards like this one. The streets are lined with big blocks of apartment buildings, some old and elegant with ironwork balconies, some newer and more functional.
Keep walking. Continue straight downhill for another block.
Check out some of the stores. International high-fashion boutiques abound here, like Dolce & Gabbana.
Ooh, I see Jimmy Choo. And there's Mont Blanc.
The neighborhood is upscale and global-minded, just like it was when it was built more than a century ago. You see, the Eixample was a vast urban development project. Around 1850, the old town was bursting at the seams, so they tore down the city walls and expanded to the northwest. They called the new neighborhood exactly what it was, the Expansion.
Or, in Catalan,
the Eixample.
Keep walking downhill to our next stop, a big, weird-looking building on the left.
The heart of this new expansion was Passeig de Gràcia. The street was already an important road as it led to the nearby town of Gràcia. That former town is now the neighborhood of Gràcia, just uphill, a place known for its old-time charm and youthful scene. Passage de Gracia developed into the Eixample's most elegant street, its Champs-Élysées. This was the place to dress up, promenade in your carriage, linger for a drink at a café, or shop at a high-fashion boutique.
Just like now, minus the carriages.
Barcelona's richest folks built their mansions right along this boulevard. They hired the best and brightest architects. They wanted big bay windows to watch the promenade. And they demanded outlandish decoration to be recognized for their forward thinking and to embrace Barcelona's trendiest art style. It was called Modernisme.
Coming up on your left is one of Modernisme's greatest buildings by its greatest architect. It's the unmistakable wavy stone facade of La Pedrera. Find a good place to view it. I like the street corner that's directly kitty-corner from La Pedrera. See you there.
La Pedrera, also known as Casa Milà. Of all the over-the-top mansions built in the Eixample, this one was the most daring. Even today, its outrageous exterior laughs down on the crowds. It was built around 1906 by Antoni Gaudí. Gaudí built it as a home for a wealthy developer and his wealthier wife. They were the Milà family. That gives this casa its name. Barcelonans now call Casa Milà La Pedrera, the quarry. That's because of its rocky, jagged facade. The Milas were forward-thinking people, and they clearly gave Gaudí free range on his imagination. It has a much-photographed roller coaster of melting ice cream eaves. Check out the wavy, gravy balconies. They sport ironwork railings.
They almost look like squiggly modern art sculptures.
Yes, and some of the support columns look like bones. That's a Gaudí trademark. Looking up to the roof, you can see a few chimneys. These are just some of the building's 30 chimneys, each one unique.
Yeah, one of them looks like a soft ice cream cone topped with a... Is that a cross or a flower? Another chimney looks like it's wearing a Darth Vader helmet.
It really gets you thinking. The building was certainly shocking when it was built. It may have looked like a fanciful mess, but it was solidly built. You see, Gaudí was descended from 4 generations of metal workers, a lineage of which he was quite proud. He applied that technology to his architecture. So, though La Pedrera's facade is made of thousands of blocks of stone, the actual load-bearing structure is a skeleton of steel. Inside, Gaudí made sure it had all the latest technology, circa 1906, from elevators to electric lights. If you pay to tour it, you'll see the apartment's original furnishings. You can also go up to the attic, where you can walk beneath Gaudí's cutting-edge arches shaped like perfect parabolas. The climax of the visit is going up on the roof. You can walk among the colorfully tiled chimneys and enjoy great views of the Eixample. With La Pedrera, Gaudí seemed to sum up the futuristic spirit of the age. And even today, this mansion remains Barcelona's quintessential modernista building.
Let's explore more of the Eixample. From Passage de Gracia, turn right on Carré de Provença.
That would be right on Provença, as you're facing downhill.
Turn right and start heading southwest along Carré de Provença, toward the end of the block.
Carré de Provença. As you walk to the end of the block, you might be struck by the neighborhood's livability. Hardy plane trees for shade, beautiful wide sidewalks.
Tony shops and apartments with nice bay windows.
Clearly, an exclusive neighborhood. Notice the dedicated bike lane and the long lines of parked motor scooters. To maintain the Eixample's quality of life, car traffic is restricted, so locals find other ways to get around. Livability has always been what the Eixample is all about.
Keep walking. Rick, tell us more about the origins of the Eixample.
Of course. The year is 1850. The economy is booming, fueled by the Industrial Revolution. Catalunya's abundant coal deposits powered lucrative textile factories, which attracted workers from all over Spain. Meanwhile, Barcelona's 200,000 citizens were jammed inside its old medieval walls, the dirty Barri Gòtic, or Gothic Quarter.
Sounds like Barcelona was all jacked up, but with nowhere to grow.
Indeed, Lisa, indeed. It was a slum of overcrowded tenements, disease, and air choked with coal soot. The quality of life was absolutely miserable. There was only one solution. Expansion.
Eixample.
They tore down the walls and leveled this huge tract of land to the north. It gave bold architects and civic engineers a blank canvas upon which to create an urban planning masterpiece.
By now, you should be approaching the end of the block.
And speaking of quality of life, on the right side of the street is the Maori Pastry Shop. Since 1929, this has been an elegant slice of livability. At Maori, it's always tea time for local grandmas.
When you reach the intersection, we'll be turning left on the wide boulevard called Rambla de Catalunya. Notice that there's a pleasant median strip in the middle that we can walk down. So make your way there now.
Rambla de Catalunya. First, just stand here at the top of the street and survey the intersection around you. Notice the buildings have cut-off corners. Hexagonal intersections like this were part of the Eixample's ingenious design. It showed off the fine building facades, it allowed traffic to move more freely, and it gave citizens an exhilarating feeling of breathing room in a fast-growing city.
Now, start heading down Rambla de Catalunya. We'll be going three blocks in all, so just relax and keep strolling downhill while Rick points out some things along the way.
Rambla de Catalunya, with its rows of trees and inviting sidewalk cafes, is kind of like the Passeig de Gràcia, but quieter and more manageable. The boutiques along here are just as upscale, but they're more local and unique than those on the main drag. We're strolling through the Eixample neighborhood's classiest area. It's called the Quadrat d'Or, or Golden Quarter. The entire Eixample is huge, covering nearly 3 square miles.
That's more than twice the size of New York's Central Park.
But the Golden Quarter is just a handful of blocks straddling the Passeig de Gràcia.
Keep on strolling.
By the way, the area a few blocks further to the right is a center of the local gay community.
Yes, it's earned the nickname Gay-Champla. Rick, tell us more about the Eixample's grand vision.
The expansion was trusted to a bold civil engineer named Ildefons Cerdà. He proposed a remarkably modern plan. It would be in the form of a grid made up of very wide streets, so different from Barcelona's claustrophobic old town. Each block would be exactly 250 meters long.
So walking around the block is a kilometer.
Well, yes, if you don't cut corners. Remember, Cerdà snipped off the corners at the intersections to create those spacious hexagonal piazzas.
We're approaching one such intersection.
And its cut-off corners show off a particularly nice building, a beautiful red-toned facade on the left corner with big bay windows.
Nice, but we're not stopping here. Cross the intersection and just keep going straight, continuing down the next block of Rambla de Catalunya.
Work on the Eixample began in 1860. Cerdà envisioned a world in which everything was accessible to everyone, rich and poor alike. Each block would have its own market, schools, and daycare centers. The building heights were restricted so sunlight could reach every unit. The hollow space inside each apartment block would be a neighborhood park.
Cerdà's vision really was an urban planning success story.
As you keep walking, check out the apartments. Each one is different. Some old, some new, some elegant.
Some kind of ugly.
But despite their different facades, they share a similar layout. The family who owned the building rented out the ground floor to shops and businesses.
As it still is today.
They rented the top floor as small apartments for poorer tenants. The owners lived in the middle, in elegant rooms with high ceilings. They enjoyed nice ironwork balconies and grand bay windows. Some buildings had two entrance doors, one for the owner and one for the upstairs tenants.
About three-quarters of the way down this block, keep an eye out on the left-hand side for an especially nice-looking facade. It's at number 78 on the left-hand side. Stop here for a moment to enjoy this facade.
This apartment with an elaborately carved facade is the Casa Juncosa. It was built in 1909, right around the same time as Gaudí's La Pedrera. It's the work of a less well-known and obviously less daring architect. Its best feature is the big central bay window that curves so gracefully. Instead of wild ironwork railings like Gaudí's La Pedrera, this building has ornate carvings of traditional motifs like garlands and vines. These days, the mansion is divided into high-priced condos. If it's open, step inside of the atrium and say hi to the doorman. Before moving on, check out the sidewalk outside the door. Look for a small, round, red paving stone with a flower-shaped design in it. This marks the Casa Juncosa as a stop on the Ruta de Modernisme, Barcelona's route of modernism. It's one of more than 100 buildings in the Modernista style that the city of Barcelona proudly shows off to visitors.
We're headed toward the heart of Modernisme, so let's continue on. Keep strolling downhill. At the intersection, cross the street and keep going straight ahead, continuing down the next block of Rambla de Catalunya. Rick, tell us more about that art style called Modernisme.
Certainly. The Modernist style coincided with that same economic boom that birthed the Eixample. Locals also use another word to describe that optimistic era, the Renascenza. All across Europe in the late 1800s, it was a time of national resurgence. Downtrodden peoples, from the Basques to the Irish to the Finns, were throwing off the cultural domination of other nations and celebrating what made their own culture unique.
The modern nations of Italy and Germany were being born then, too.
Here in Catalunya, the Renascença meant a resurgence of interest in all things Catalan. People began speaking their traditional language of Catalan rather than Spanish. They danced the sardana. Writers revived the rich folk tales from Barcelona's golden age of the 1300s. But even as they revived the past, they also looked to the future. They embraced new technology. It was the era of streetcars, indoor plumbing, electric lights, big-wheeled bicycles, and the first train line in Spain. In 1888, the city hosted a World's Fair that showed off their culture to the world while renovating the city. Nowhere was this exciting new spirit stronger than here in the Eixample. It summed up that progressive spirit with its enlightened urban planning, and the buildings that went up captured the boldness and the elegance of the modern new style, Modernisme.
Up ahead is our next Modernista building. By now, you should be approaching the end of the block. The cross street is Carré d'Arago. We'll be turning left, but first, cross to the other side of d'Arago and then turn left so we can walk along the right side of the street.
Tapias Foundation, a modernist building.
As you head northeast on Carré d'Arago, you immediately see our next stop. It's on the left side of the street, the Fundació Antoni Tàpies.
It's the brick building with that crazy metal hairdo.
Stop here for a moment and enjoy this unusual modernist structure.
It was designed by Luis Domènech i Montaner. He was one of the Holy Trinity of great modernist architects. This building's a nice appetizer for the more famous block of Discord that we'll see in just a moment. It has many of the typical elements of the modernist style. First, the building was very modern for its day.
Yes, it was made of what were then cutting-edge building materials, a skeleton of iron beams faced with brick and glass.
And like so many modernist buildings, it's decorated with playful motifs from Catalan's mythology. Motifs like the trumpeting angel up on top. Most of all, the building was functional. Inside, it's spacious, uncluttered, and filled with natural light.
So what's up with that crazy metal hairdo? Talk about a bad hair day.
Well, that's not modernist per se. It's a piece of art by the artist whose work is now housed inside, Antoni Tàpies. Tàpies was probably Spain's most famous late 20th century painter. As a native of Barcelona, he carried the torch of the modernist spirit. He learned from the likes of Montaner, just as other modern artists with Barcelona ties did, artists from Picasso to Miro to Salvador Dalí.
Let's move on and see some of Modernismo's greatest hits. Keep going along Carré Durazzo to the end of the block.
If you need a quick break before then, you could pop into the hardware store. It's called Servei Estació.
Though we won't go in.
They have a rooftop terrace with self-serve coffee and a nice view.
But let's keep walking up Durazzo Street.
We're approaching a true mecca of Modernismo. The modernist movement reigned supreme from roughly 1890 to 1910. It celebrated Catalunya's cultural past while championing all things modern. Architects used all the latest technology, but they made sure it was beautiful.
Sounds kind of like Art Nouveau.
Or what they call Jugendstil in Germany, Liberty Style in England, Tiffany in America, Skånverk in Sweden.
Okay, we get it.
Modernismo is Barcelona's version of that same curvy, wistful style found elsewhere in Europe called Art Nouveau. Here in the Eixample, architects built with modern concrete and iron and decorated with playful, colorful medieval motifs. The modernist craze was a perfect storm of economic prosperity, urban planning, unbridled architectural innovation, industrial-age technology, and Catalan cultural pride.
By now, you should be approaching the intersection with our old friend Passeig de Gràcia, the Eixample's main drag.
It's the same street we started on. In fact, La Pedrera is just a few blocks uphill.
Stop here, turn right, and face downhill, and take in the scene before you. You're standing at the head of the section of Passeig de Gràcia called the Block of Discord.
The Block of Discord and Casa Batlló. One block, three buildings by the three best-known Modernista architects making a lot of visual commotion. That's the Block of Discord. All three buildings were done within about a decade, around the year 1900. This is the most convenient place to see their contrasting visions side by side.
Start with the most famous of the three. It's the wild, colorful building just a few steps down on the right side at number 43, Casa Batlló. Find yourself a good place where you can survey the entire facade.
Casa Batlló is hard to miss. It looks like a birthday cake where a four-year-old was in charge of the sprinkles. It's the work of Antoni Gaudí. He did it in 1904, just a couple of years before La Pedrera. It has many elements of Gaudí's signature style. The entire facade is wavy, especially the lower stories. The windows are egg-shaped and made of stained glass. The columns look like human bones. Gaudí was inspired by the ingenuity of Mother Nature, and he utilized the same natural structures. The facade is speckled with colorful shards. That's another Gaudí trademark. These shards are actually things others threw away. Broken tiles from a mosaic factory, shattered dishes and glassware, even discarded china dolls. It was an easy, cheap, and aesthetically pleasing way to turn a boring building into a real happening.
The top of Casa Batlló is the icing on the cake. You may need to back up a bit to get a good view.
It has an undulating roofline similar to La Pedrera. There's a turret that looks like something from a medieval castle, and that's topped with a Christian cross, like a church. Remember, modernist artists had a love affair with Catalunya's glorious past. That's prompted some to read medieval symbolism into this building. Gaudí may have been inspired by Barcelona's most famous medieval legend, St. George, or Jordi. George famously slew a dragon.
Yes, I think I can see the dragon. The humpback roofline suggests a cresting dragon's back, and the roof tiles are his scales.
And the building's tibia-like columns evoke the bones of the dragon's victims. And George could slay the dragon because he was powered by God.
That's what the cross on the turret reminds us.
Now, find the teeny tiny balcony just beneath the dragon. It's shaped like a rosebud, representing the rose that grew from the slain dragon's blood.
Nice legend, but I've heard another interpretation. Some say it represents Mardi Gras, so the weird-looking balconies are actually carnival masks.
Yeah, I can see that too.
The ceramic is the confetti, and the wavy roof isn't a dragon, but the floppy hat of a harlequin.
Okay, then here's another interpretation based on an old Catalonian folktale. Look at the first floor bay window. If you squint, you might see the main character of that folktale. It's a bat.
I guess. So it's a bat slaying a dragon at Mardi Gras?
Well, whatever it is, it's clear that Gaudí had an incredibly inventive mind. And much like the abstract artists he inspired, he preferred to leave his art open to the viewer's interpretation.
Well, there's plenty more ambiguity on this block of Discord, so let's move on.
Yes, but before we do, turn 180 degrees. Look across the boulevard at the building directly across from Casa Batlló. It's the one right next to the glass building on the corner. This was built around the same time as Gaudí's. In fact, it's what Casa Batlló looked like before Gaudí was hired to renovate it with a new facade.
Great. Now let's move on.
Yes, but before we do...
Oh, brother.
You can pay admission to go inside Casa Batlló, though we won't. The interior is much more over the top than La Pedrera's. There's barely a straight line in the entire house. You'll find a funky mushroom-shaped fireplace, a ceramic-slathered atrium, and more of Gaudí's wild parabolic arches. The grand finale is a chance to go up on the rooftop among the chimneys. It's like wandering through the fertile mind of Antoni Gaudí.
Gaudí was certainly a remarkable innovator, but the next two buildings we'll see are perhaps more purely representative of the Modernista style. Our next stop is literally just next door, a few steps downhill at number 41.
Casa Amatier. This delightful building is faced with rosy-hued ceramic tiles and topped with a zigzag step gable. Built around the year 1900, it was the work of a very influential architect. His name was...
You can do this.
His name was...
Take a deep breath.
Josep Puig Cadafalch.
Josep Puig Cadafalch. Yes, high five.
Like a true modernist, Puig Cadafalch celebrated Catalan's national heritage, and Spain's too. The tiles with their intricate pentagrams and vines recall the abstract patterns on the walls of a Moorish palace. The windows with their sculptured tracery remember Barcelona's Gothic heritage.
Yes, I even see medieval-style gargoyles there on the big bay window at the lower right.
And finally, there's the step gable roof.
Like something you'd see in Belgium.
That evokes Spain's Habsburg connection to the Low Countries. Hey, Lisa, here's something kind of cool. Notice how the house is all about the letter A. The pointed gable, that's like a capital letter A. And look at the big bay window. It's topped with an elaborately sculpted capital letter A.
Yeah, I see it. The gargoyles are on the A's crossbar.
The architect was celebrating the people who commissioned this house, the Amatier family.
Which begins with A.
Now, look closer at that bay window. Within that A, you'll see several more A's sprouting from the branches.
Yeah, I see them.
They're sprouting from a tree. It's an almond tree, because Amatier means
almond tree. I've had some delicious Amatier chocolate. Is that the same family?
Exactly. The Amatiers were Barcelona's best-known chocolate makers. And even today, Amatier chocolates are some of Spain's very best.
I like Puig Cadafalch's work. Very playful. Let's see more.
Okay. First, look closely inside the bay window.
There's a corkscrew column inside. Pretty cool. But what's it there for?
No reason at all, except a fun element to catch the eye. Now, head for the left side of the facade, starting with the two doorways. Look between the two doorways at the sculpture. It's about eye level.
There's St. Geordie again, slaying the dragon.
Yeah, that popular scene was like the poster child for that 19th century cultural resurgence called the Renascenza. Its presence here proclaimed to all the world that Antoni Ametller was a proud champion of that progressive pro-Catalan movement.
Now take a few steps to the right and check out the three windows with the balcony. Start with the left window.
This window celebrates the Ametller's hard work. Above the window is a coat of arms with tools of industry.
I see a hammer and a compass.
Now look a few feet below that, on the left side. There's a small statue.
It's a crazy rabbit. He's pouring something out of a jar. It looks like molten chocolate? I love their chocolate.
Good guess, but no. It's actually molten iron, a symbol of Barcelona's industrial age. And on the right side of the window, there's another statue of a couple monkeys hammering it into steel.
Now let's move to the central window.
This window shows how the Ametllers used their money to patronize the arts. So the statue on the left side of the window is a donkey wearing glasses.
He must be a writer.
Yes, and on the right side is the most interesting statue of all. Look closely. It's two crouching dogs. One has his head covered with a cloth. That dog is holding
an old-style camera on a tripod.
You got it. Antoni Ametller was himself an amateur photographer. He had a studio up in the attic. And there's more. He was also a collector of precious glass.
As seen in the final window on the right, featuring a glass-blowing frog. Fun stuff.
These playful elements capture the optimistic spirit of Barcelona and all of Europe at the turn of the 20th century.
Before we head to the third modernist house on the block, take a moment to step inside the Casa Ametller. Head through the doors on the left.
It's free and open most of the time. You'll reach an interior courtyard. It gives a sense of the livability of a residence like this.
Nice. I love the braided columns, the marble floors, the modernista stained glass.
The pink walls and the wood beam ceiling. And an elaborate stone staircase topped with eagles. By the way, if you pay to go inside, you'll see lots of original furniture placed just as the Ametllers had it when they lived here.
And is there free chocolate?
No. But just past the stained glass doors is a cafe where you can enjoy hot chocolate made from Ametller chocolate.
I'll definitely be coming back here later. But for now, let's head back out to the street.
Back outside, you'll find yet another dimension of modernisme. Peek into the windows of the jewelry shop housed in the Casa Ametller. It's called Bagues Joieria. The shop sells curvaceous jewelry by the Barcelonian artist Mas Riera. He was working at the same time as the Block of Discord was being built. Mas Riera created necklaces and brooches using the same Art Nouveau motifs. Flowers, vines, colored glass, and willowy maidens.
Now start heading to our final stop on the block. It's downhill a few more steps. The house at the end of the block.
As you go, you'll pass a couple of less interesting buildings by less famous artists. But even these have a few whimsical modernist features, like nice bay windows, balconies, and sculptured ornaments. Everyone on this block wanted to show off their sense of style.
When you reach the end of the block, find a nice place to view the house on the corner at number 35.
Casa Jo Marrera. This house is a jumble of different architectural styles.
A kind of paella of styles.
Actually, a bouillabaisse, a mix, a fusion, a mashup.
Okay.
The most prominent feature on this eclectic facade is the round bay window at the corner. It's classical, with fluted columns, like a mini Greek temple.
Looking through the window, you can see another marble column inside.
This column was also only for show, supporting nothing but some aristocrat's ego. Above the bay window are a pair of balconies. The rosettes and tracery show off another style. It's Gothic. Above that, the elaborate designs look like Moorish stucco work, and the whole building is topped with a cupola straight out of, what? It's something like a Sultan's Pleasure Palace. Talk about eclectic.
Let's browse around, checking out the building from the sides.
Everywhere you look, there are little sculpted doodads, from mythological griffins to Christian angels to, well, fish. On the middle floor, find the long stone balconies with statues. These robed women symbolize the arts, but look what they're holding. Not traditional symbols like lyres and paintbrushes, but a camera, a light bulb, a gramophone. It announced to all who passed just how progressive these homeowners were. The building is the work of our last great architect in that modernist trinity. His name was...
Here we go again.
Luis Domenic y Montaner.
Bravo!
He built it in 1906. Like the other architects in this block, Domenic y Montaner started with a pre-existing building. He demolished the old facade and then rebuilt it with a new curtain of stone. Also like Gaudí and Puig i Cadafalch, he used collaborators. In fact, Montaner used the same sculptor as Puig i Cadafalch.
And Puig used the same ceramic artist as Gaudí.
Look for hidden sculptures depicting mulberries. It's kind of like a long blackberry, as well as clusters of mulberry blossoms. They pay tribute to the owners of the house, the Morveres, or mulberry family. Unfortunately, though the interior of this place is as spectacular as the others, it's closed to visitors. But the exterior, with its daring mix of styles and playful motifs, makes Casa Yo Morera a classic example of that exuberant style called Modernisma.
Let's move on. From here, we'll cross the street to the other side of Passage de Gracia. So head for the crosswalk.
As you go, notice other amenities that make the Passage de Gracia so livable. Near the Mulberry House is a round stone bench wrapped around a shade-giving tree.
When the light turns, cross to the other side of Passage de Gracia.
Be careful. If you're tempted to snap photos from the middle of the street, keep in mind that Gaudí died by getting hit by a streetcar.
Grim, but true.
As you approach the other side, you'll find more amenities with that artistic flair. You'll see elegant ironwork lamps. Some of them support lanterns that were originally for gas lighting. Other lamps are tall, rusty ironwork structures that arc out over the street.
I see one straight ahead along the curb.
Look down at that street lamp's base. There's a stone bench. It's decorated in the playful mosaic style of Modernisma. Neighborhood benches like this came with built-in stoves to warm the bums of the Eixample residents.
By now, you should be on the other side of Passage de Gracia.
Once there, look down at the sidewalk beneath your feet. It's made of hexagonal tiles. The tiles create patterns, waves, and spirals that recall the sea. The tiles were designed by none other than Gaudí. And they're here now for no other purpose than to give the Eixample yet another layer of urban beauty.
From here, on the other side of the street, we'll be turning left and walking uphill, back up the block of Discord.
The Block of Discord, Part 2, The Legacy of Modernisma.
Start walking uphill.
From here, you can enjoy nice views across the street at the Block of Discord All-Stars. These three buildings made a lasting mark on Barcelona. Let's recap. First, there's that Mulberry House by Domenic y Montaner.
As you admire the facade, just keep walking while Rick talks.
After building this mansion, Domenic y Montaner went on to even greater things. As an influential politician, he was responsible for some of Barcelona's major civic buildings. His masterwork was the Palace of Catalan Music, a concert hall featuring a kaleidoscopic skylight. It's still used today, both beautiful and functional, the essence of Modernisma.
Keep strolling uphill, gazing across at Casa Amatier.
And that's the mansion by Puig i Cadafalch. He went on to be a city planner. He designed Via Laietana, the big boulevard that cuts through the old city, linking the Eixample to the port. He also developed Montjuïc, the big hill overlooking the city, for the 1929 World Expo. He did the brick factory that became today's Caixa Forum. And he designed Els Quatre Gats. That's the dive bar hangout of Picasso and the next generation of Modernist. It remains popular as a restaurant today, especially with tourists.
When you reach the end of the block, stop. Take a moment to look across and admire, once more, the colorful Casa Batlló.
The greatest and most influential architect of them all was Antoni Gaudí. Besides Casa Batlló and La Pedrera, he designed other mansions, like Palau Güell, just off the Ramblas. He did Parc Güell, an ambitious housing development for the rich on a hill at the edge of town. And his bold innovations influenced not just architects, but artists like Picasso, Miró, Dalí, and Tapies.
As we stand here and look at Casa Batlló, I can't help but think of how it served as a foundation for Gaudí's greatest work. And my favorite site in the city, Sagrada Familia.
Gaudí called upon all the wisdom he'd learned from his work in the Eixample to build his Sagrada Familia. This was his supersized, awe-inspiring church that stands on the edge of the Eixample. With its cake-in-the-rain facade and otherworldly spires, the church was not only the pinnacle of Modernisme, it became an icon of Barcelona itself. Gaudí labored 43 years on the church, and when he died in 1926, it was still far from finished. But the people of Barcelona have picked up the torch, and they're working on it to this day. They're determined to finish it, bringing that long-ago modernist vision into our 21st century.
Take note of where you're standing. Our tour will eventually be returning to this exact spot, where you'll be free to explore more. But for now, let's move on. We'll branch off Passage de Gracia to see some less touristed parts of the Eixample. So let's get going. Face uphill and turn right. Start heading down the big, wide, traffic-filled boulevard called Carrer d'Arago.
Carrer d'Arago, the Workaday Eixample. As you walk down the street to the end of the block, it's clear we've entered a less glamorous part of the Eixample.
With all this traffic, it's not exactly the clip-clop world of horse carriages that urban designer Cerdà imagined.
True, but the Eixample has had to adapt as Barcelona has grown. It was built for a city of 200,000, not 2 million.
Keep walking to the end of the block.
Carrer d'Arago has become the Eixample's major east-west thoroughfare for the automobile. The traffic blares as busy Barcelonans head to their next appointment. Instead of stately mansions, this street has modern glass and steel office buildings. Instead of charming sidewalk cafes, there are car garages, post office, a supermarket, and a government building stuffed with bureaucrats. Oh, there are still a few older structures here with classical columns and bay windows. But this is hardly the place for your Eixample photo op.
Fortunately, we're turning off this busy street. So as you approach the end of the block, get ready. We'll be turning left on Carrer de Pau Claris. Find the crosswalk and wait for the light. When it turns, cross the street and start heading up Pau Claris.
In the 1970s, there was lots of thoughtless building in the Eixample. That was before they started giving old buildings heritage status. Now there's a rule. If a building is more than 50 years old, it's protected. Unfortunately, many of those eyesores from the 1970s are now reaching that threshold when they themselves might become a permanent part of Barcelona's cityscape. No one's sure yet how to handle that.
By now, you should be making your way uphill on Carrer de Pau Claris. We're headed for the end of the block.
Pau Claris is a bit more pleasant, lined with trees, wider sidewalks, nicer shops and restaurants. Many apartments have elegant balconies.
Definitely more uptown.
In fact, the Eixample is literally uptown. It occupies the upper elevation of a vast plain. Barcelona's highest point is basically straight ahead of you, in the distance, though you probably can't see it. It's the 1,700-foot hill called Tibidabo, with a church on top. From that high point, Barcelona slopes gently down about 4 miles to the harbor and the Mediterranean. The apartments along Pau Claris are typical. Most have an interior courtyard they share with their neighbors on the block. Originally, these were pleasant gardens, but nowadays most are used as parking lots. Some Eixample buildings have a modern annex plunked on top. Since the 1980s, landowners have been allowed to construct an extra floor or two if they like. But despite all the modern changes to the Eixample, this remains one of the city's most desirable neighborhoods.
Keep going to the end of the block. At that point, we'll turn right. So that's right on Carrer de València.
Carrer de València.
Start walking down the street. In all, we'll be going 2.5 blocks to the neighborhood market.
But along the way, we'll see some things that make the Eixample still so livable. Things like a gourmet deli, a music school, fancy apartment houses, and a destination flower shop, and...
And a place for the community to gather. Our first stop is just 30 yards down on the right at number 302. This is the Centre Cultural La Casa Elizalde.
Step inside the passageway. Everybody's welcome here. This is a cultural center operated by the City of Barcelona. Notice the bulletin board listing community events. This place is a hive of creative and personal growth activities, lectures, yoga classes, concerts, and neighborhood dances. Continue further inside a few more steps down the hall. You'll pop out into an appealing open-air courtyard with benches. This is one of those interior courtyards that came with Eixample apartment blocks. The idea was to give people ventilation, light, and an oasis in the city, their own neighborhood park.
But enough peace and quiet. Let's start heading back out to the busy street.
Yes, let's. But you could always pause the audio tour here and explore the rest of this community center. Upstairs, there are usually free art exhibits. There's even public toilets, women on the first floor, men on the second. Wandering around, you get a rare glimpse into the inside of a typical old Eixample building.
Once back out on the busy street, turn right and continue to the end of the block.
You'll pass by both fancy old facades and modern structures, all mingled together. As you walk, look down at the sidewalk. It's paved with 8x8-inch concrete tiles divided into a grid of smaller squares. This particular pattern is kind of boring, but keep your eye out elsewhere in Barcelona for decorative pavement tiles that are absolutely beautiful. It's become a distinctively Barcelonian art form. There's wavy patterns like Gaudí's. There's the 5-petaled rose of Barcelona, like the tiles on Casa Ametller, and so on. This is another way that modern Barcelona carries on its tradition of modernisme.
As you approach the end of the block, you'll encounter our next stop. It's an old deli shop right on the corner. It's called J. Muria Caviris.
This is a classic high-end grocery store. It's been around since 1898. It's still run by the Muria family. Check out the turn-of-the-century exterior. The vintage ads plug wines and liqueurs of the day. The poster on the right features an elegant wine-sipping lady seated amid flowers and vines, so typical of the Art Nouveau style. A few steps to the left, another poster advertises anise liqueur. It's dubbed La Mona y el Mono, the lady and the monkey. Step inside. This old-fashioned gourmet deli sells wine, cheese, and caviar, similar to gourmet delis you might find in Paris. Browse the wares.
And check out the prices. Yikes.
Yes, it's stocked with products perfect for its high-end Eixample clientele. Though it looks mainly like a wine shop, breathe deep. Oh, yeah. That's the scent of fine cheeses, aging beneath your feet in the Muria cellar.
Let's head back outside and continue on.
Wait, Lisa. I need to buy some $100 caviar and a $200 bottle of champagne for our picnic.
Dream on, Rockefeller.
Well, how about a baguette and a bottle of Coke?
That sounds about right. Once outside, just keep going down Carrer de València.
As you cross the intersection here, take note of the buildings. Several have interesting facades. One has bone-like columns.
Gaudí's style lives on.
Another has some nice bay windows and glassed-in balconies. As you continue down Valencia Street, you'll see a few more classic facades. Facades with elaborate bay windows and ironwork balconies.
Keep going down Valencia to our next stop, a flower shop. That's about two-thirds of the way down the block. As you go, enjoy a short selection of music. So head for the Navarro Flower Shop at number 320. Enjoy the music, and we'll see you there. Nice. By now, you should be at the Navarro Flower Shop. Step inside.
It's open literally 24/7, and you're always welcome to browse. Take a fragrant stroll, looping deep into the shop. Besides cut flowers, there are potted plants and gifts. Depending on the time of year, you might see a seasonal theme. They decorate big time at Christmas. Any time of year, the place is a magnet for the neighborhood and a destination for Barcelonans.
And because it's open 24/7, I guess there's just no excuse if a loved one is deserving of flowers.
This is a wonderful place to just browse, and you could always pause the audio tour. But
when you're ready, let's head to our next stop, the Concepción Market. Start exiting the flower shop. Turn right and continue down Valencia Street. The Concepción Market is 100 yards ahead on the right.
As you go, you'll pass an odd building that looks like a castle with two turrets. It's actually the city-run Music Academy. You may see students hurrying in with violin cases on their backs.
Keep going past the academy, another half block to the market entrance.
Ponder the fact that in just the last two blocks, we've passed a community center, a deli, a flower shop, and a school. This is very much in keeping with that original vision for the Eixample, a neighborhood where residents have easy access to everything they need. Coming up next is one of the most important services of all, the neighborhood market.
Keep going down Carrer de Valencia until you reach the iron and glass structure that houses the market, the Mercat de la Concepción.
La Concepción Market. This public market has served the community for over, well, as the sign over the entrance says, for more than 130 years.
Step in and browse your way through it to the far end. Take your time. Don't worry about getting lost. Whenever you're ready to leave, you can just meet up with us at the far end, on the downhill side, where we'll exit.
The Concepción Market has many of the same features as more famous markets elsewhere in Barcelona.
I visited La Boqueria on the Ramblas. I loved it. And the Santa Catarina Market in El Born, that was even better.
And this one has something they don't, virtually no tourists. Keep exploring. This is a working market for the locals. It's big and it's practical. Here's where they buy their favorite local cheeses and olives, some pork for tonight's dinner, or fruit for dessert. There's also a modern supermarket in the basement and a parking garage below that. If you're hungry or thirsty, this is a great place to take a break from our tour, sample some cheese, buy a fruity drink, or grab a stool at a counter for some cheap and ultra-fresh tapas. This is the handiest spot on this walk for a tasty budget bite.
Explore the market as you make your way to the far end.
Enjoy some more music while you shop, eat, and just take in the scene.
When you're ready to continue our walk, we'll pick it up again at the next track, leaving from the market's downhill exit.
See you there.
By now, you should be at the downhill exit to La Concepción Market. We'll lead you from there on the next track.
From the market to the Church of the Holy Conception.
Exiting the market at the far end, turn right on Carre Durago. Our next stop is a big church 100 yards ahead on Durago Street.
We're walking down that same big noisy boulevard we were on earlier, Carre Durago. It cuts right through the heart of the Eixample, from Avenue Diagonal all the way to the Plaza de España.
As you approach the end of the block, just keep going straight, crossing Carre del Bruc.
As you cross the intersection, check out the building on the right corner. It's an impressive structure with flags flying, an iron gate, and a coat of arms. This is a government building, a local branch of City Hall that caters especially to the Eixample needs. Its neo-Gothic architecture is, appropriately enough for the Eixample, fanciful.
Continue straight ahead along noisy Carre Durago.
Our next stop is a church, a very old church, Lisa. It's from the 14th century.
Okay, I'll bite. How can there be a 700-year-old church here in this neighborhood that was only built 150 years ago?
Good question. The church once stood in the old city. As the walls came down and the city expanded, many old churches got leveled in the rush. But a few were saved. In the 1870s, this venerable church was lovingly dismantled, brick by brick, and moved from its old location to here. It made perfect sense. Remember, the Eixample was all about the Renascenza, honoring the old while embracing the new.
As you approach the end of the block, the Church of the Holy Conception should be coming into view on the right.
The Church of the Holy Conception. The church exterior is pure 14th century Gothic. It has a stark, bare brick facade, lightened only by a single rose window in the center. As I mentioned earlier, the church was moved here from the Gothic quarter and reassembled stone by stone. You can see patches of newer brick from the restoration, especially in the upper part. To complete the jigsaw puzzle, they added the bell tower, and this was from a different church that was also slated for destruction. Barcelonans have a nickname for relocated churches like this. They call them traveling buildings.
The cross on top looks vaguely familiar. Where have I seen that before?
Casa Batlló, that's where. The cross here looks like the one Gaudí put atop his house on the block of Discord. Modernists like Gaudí revived those medieval motifs. Motifs like crosses, knights, and dragons for their futuristic buildings.
Start heading inside.
If this main entrance is locked, try entering by way of the cloister. It's around the left side of the building complex.
Go in and take a seat.
It's cool. It's peaceful. Look around. The interior has many classic features of Barcelona Gothic. First, it's mostly made of blocks of gray stone. The ceiling is formed with crisscross vaults. The ribs culminate in medallions depicting saints. The side chapels are sturdy, doubling as interior buttresses to help hold up the roof. Dotting the nave are various statues, many of them depicting local saints. Most statues are painted and realistic to put a human face on these holy people. The church is lit by intricately crafted chandeliers, and crowning the prickly altar is, what else? A statue of Mary. This church was originally part of a monastery. Monasteries always had an adjoining cloister or courtyard. Let's go see the cloister.
The cloister is to the left, so find the door midway up the nave and exit to the left. This leads you outside into an open-air cloister from around the year 1600. Enjoy its delightful atmosphere.
Stroll around this lovely arcade surrounding the garden-like courtyard. The slender columns and delicate arches mingle with the exotic plants. There are palm trees, banana, magnolia, and orange trees. It's not hard to imagine cloistered monks communing with nature here, in this oasis of tranquility. Meditation in the cloister was just as important as prayer in the church, just another path to God.
Before heading back outside for the rest of our walk, take a little more time here. Enjoy the cloister and the church while you listen to a short selection of music. Nice. To continue the walk, return to the busy boulevard, Carré d'Arago. You can get there by backtracking through the church, or you can exit the cloister at the far end and turn left. See you on Carré d'Arago. Thank you.
Carré d'Arago, Part 2, Back to Passage de Gracia.
As you leave the church and return to the busy street, turn right and start walking once again along Carré d'Arago. Our next stop is 2 blocks further. We're headed back to Passage de Gracia and the Block of Discord.
The street we're walking along is the same modern axis we were on earlier, the one that cuts like a dagger through the heart of the Eixample.
Pretty ugly.
Yes, but in a way, it's fitting. As you recall, the Eixample was built in the late 19th century, right in the thick of the Industrial Revolution. The Eixample was also meant to be a place of modern business. Many of the buildings that went up here were from the same era as early skyscrapers from, say, Chicago or New York. The task of urban planners like Cerdà and architects like Gaudí was to use the new industrial technology, but also to create order and beauty. They built with iron beams and concrete, then faced it with decorative elements to create art.
Still, this street is not what I'd call art. So let's hurry back to the Block of Discord. Just keep going straight up Carré d'Arago, one more block.
To drown out the cacophony of cars, here's a little more music.
Keep walking, and we'll see you back at Passage de Gracia and the Block of Discord. By now, you should be back at the Block of Discord.
The heart of the Eixample, Passage de Gracia to Plaça de Catalunya. We've arrived back at the heart of the Eixample. From here, the neighborhood's at your fingertips. In fact, you may want to simply end our audio tour right here, especially if you saw a nice shop or restaurant along the way that you want to return to. But our final official stop is Plaça de Catalunya, the grand square where the Eixample meets the Ramblas and the Gothic Quarter. Let's start heading there now.
Start walking downhill while Rick explains some of your options.
We're headed toward the Plaça de Catalunya. It's about 4 blocks downhill. Here on the Block of Discord, you could tour Casa Batlló or Casa Ametller, or you could head uphill to La Pedrera. Note that there's a metro stop right here if your sightseeing plans are further afield. The iconic church of Sagrada Familia is just a short taxi ride away. Or just explore more of the Eixample, a great neighborhood to grab a meal.
I'll say, I've seen plenty of options, but let's keep walking toward Plaça de Catalunya.
Maybe I could entice you with a little shopping.
Twist my arm.
I will, but you gotta keep walking with me downhill. While the Barigatik has hole-in-the-wall shops, the Aishample is literally the uptown shopping district. As we saw, the fancier shops, Gucci, Louis Vuitton, Chanel, those are located further up. As we go downhill, you'll find more middle-brow stores, places like Zara, Mango, and H&M. If you want more local options, head one block to the right, back to Rambla de Catalunya. That has smaller boutiques for clothing, home decor, jewelry, and perfume. For foodies, the Aishample has several well-stocked kitchen stores, and there are many shops selling creative souvenirs of the modernist style, things like Art Nouveau jewelry and those decorative pavement tiles.
For now, let's just keep walking downhill toward Plaza de Catalunya. If you somehow get lost, find the angel up ahead. He's on top of a building on the right. He seems to be saying, "Hey guys, Plaza de Catalunya is this way."
As you go further downhill, notice how the elegant 19th century Aishample starts melding into the 21st century city. Softly rounded buildings start giving way to stern rectangular skyscrapers. Passage de Gracia is always changing. Remember, it got its start as a humble dirt path to that medieval village of Gracia. By the year 1900, it was prime real estate for stately residences. But as the city continued to grow, real estate was at a premium. It became more lucrative to tear down those mansions and replace them with multi-story apartments and businesses. In fact, the building with the angel on top went up in the 1920s to house an insurance company.
Just keep going down Passage de Gracia. Up ahead, you'll see a big, round fountain in the middle of the intersection. Just keep going straight ahead, past the fountain, to reach Plaza de Catalunya.
The Aixample was once Barcelona's most modern section, and it's continued to set the tone for the city's future. As the city expands, architects and urban planners use the Aixample as a model. They make sure to balance modern efficiency with elements of beauty, like the fountain up ahead. The great modernist architects, like Antoni Gaudí, Domènec i Montaner, and Puig i Cadafalch, they all pointed the way to the modern world. Their sense of innovation and beauty continues to inspire artists around the world to this day.
We're reaching the end of our walk. Plaza de Catalunya is just a couple of blocks ahead.
It's an appropriate place to end the walk. Plaza de Catalunya was built to link the Aixample expansion with the old city. Symbolically, this grand square links modern Barcelona with its past. And now, Plaza de Catalunya is the center of a city that's both old and new.
With that, as we stroll to Plaza de Catalunya, we'll bid you adeo.
And so, here on the cusp between Barcelona's modern ambitions and its glorious past, this is the perfect place to conclude our Aixample walk. We hope you've enjoyed our Aixample walk. Thanks to Jean Openshaw, the co-author of this tour. If you're up for more sightseeing, we also have a Barcelona City Walk covering the Ramblas and the Gothic Quarter. And if you're doing more sightseeing in Spain and Portugal, check out our walking tours of Madrid, of Sevilla, and of Lisbon. Remember, this tour was excerpted from the Rick Steves Barcelona Guidebook. For more details on eating, sleeping, and sightseeing in Barcelona, refer to the latest edition of that guidebook. For more free audio tours and podcasts, and for information about our TV shows, bus tours, and travel gear, visit our website at ricksteves.com. This tour was produced by Cedar House Audio Productions. Gracias.
Adeo.
And happy travels.